Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
This is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Friday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well as we get the weekend started here on this third day of October. It's, man, hard to believe. I mean, here we are in October. We're 4 weeks away from Halloween.
Oh, it is, and it's starting to. I know it's still pretty hot when the sun's out, but it's starting to cool off at night pretty noticeably.
Oh, it's been much nicer recently.
A little bit north
cool
of us.
Cool at night and early in the morning. Hasn't been as humid during the day.
I thought
you were about to say, we're at a couple of places today, and I go in and there's Christmas decorations. Christmas things are for sale. It's like, come on, we're 4 weeks away from Halloween and Christmas stuff's already out.
Yeah, that's just they got space on the on the shelves, I guess. But wow. I mean, but no, and we are. I know there's some rain in the forecast over the weekend and next week. Some rain.
Well, that would be nice. I mean, it's been dry, October is generally about the driest month of the year.
I think that we could be like the East Coast could get some weird weather over the next like 10 days because
I saw some of the East Coast. I didn't know that we were in the forecast.
So two hurricanes collided in the Atlantic, and like one of them
was a perfect storm.
Well,
right?
One of them was headed kind of for the East Coast, and now they're off track. But there's some like storms kind of scattering, and we could get, you know, a little bit of that could be passing through the side of the country over the next couple of days. But yeah, but it seems like we could be in for. I mean, Bill, there's some lows in the 50s.
Wow,
on the Apple forecast over the next 10 days. So it's I think we could be on pace for another one of those trademark Octobers where it's gorgeous by the middle of the month.
Yeah, well, I'm
at least weather wise.
I'm looking for that.
At least weather wise, there's a mighty big football game in 8 days.
Yeah, we will see. We will see. Speaking of storms, I mean, there's one that's been, you know, bubbling up, and Auburn losing its last two ball games with the open date this week. Yeah. That hasn't helped quell the concerns of the storm are coming.
You know, and we don't really, I don't want to speak for you on this. Generally, I can't remember a time with an Auburn coach where I was like, you know what, it's time to part ways.
I think we were pretty close with Brian.
I think generally we haven't really done that. I think by the last couple of games of the Harsin era, it was clear that it was
a change needs to be coming.
Yeah, the winds were blowing, and I think with Hugh Freeze, no, I've been very like I think that it's understandably patient, right?
Yeah.
I think most people have wanted to see. I think if you're talking about an underwhelming offensive performance against Georgia and a loss.
Yeah, well, if it's an underwhelming offensive performance and an uncompetitive loss, then I can't imagine, you know, where any optimism would be coming from.
Oh no, I totally agree. I think that's absolutely right. You could see the supply, and we saw, you know, Arkansas make a move over the weekend. I wonder what kind of support you'd be talking about if you didn't see a breakthrough offensively at least, and maybe a breakthrough offensively and a win against Georgia. I think you know, a step forward offensively would at least, you know, some.
Let me tell you, a win of any type would make people feel a whole lot better, but it would really feel better if you felt like you were headed in the right direction offensively. And look, Auburn has the talent, I think, to be able to do that. It's just now, how much confidence do you have that they will do that?
Yeah, I just think it's reached a pretty critical point, and that's, you know, I have to imagine that's been on the minds of an Auburn team that usually takes the bye week off, mm-hmm. right? And instead,
They've been working more than usual this off week.
Yeah, I think that there was no feeling that it was time for a break and time for a vacation among those guys.
No.
I think some of them might be realizing that a more serious vacation could be on the table if things don't get better.
Permanent vacations.
That's what I think. I mean, that's how folks could be talking if it gets as bad as some fear it could next Saturday night. Now, as I pointed out Monday, Bill, like, Hugh Freeze on three different occasions as Auburn coach has delivered a performance that makes you think the team is cooked, and a week later against a top five team or a top 10 team, or at least a team that seemingly had everything put together, Auburn plays much better. Year one, they almost beat Georgia, almost beat Alabama, coming off of just, you know, unacceptable performances. And then last season, coming off of Vanderbilt, Auburn beats Texas A&M. So there has been, you know, that bounce back before. It's a dangerous way to live.
Yeah, and it is.
And he needs it probably more than ever, as far as what you saw offensively from A&M, especially the decline. Right, the thought of going from Oklahoma to A&M, like that you know, the step backwards.
Well, you felt like, all right, Oklahoma's going to be one of the best defensive fronts you're going to face all year. You know, maybe you had wanted to throw it more, but you feel like after you hear your head coach say, maybe we should have run it more. We need to dedicate ourselves to running it more, and seeing that Texas A&M had some problems. Yeah. Against teams running the football, you felt like, all right, this is a better matchup. And then Auburn went in and dropped back at a higher percentage than they did in the Oklahoma game, and only tried to rush the football with their tailbacks, seriously, on four different carries.
Yeah, I think the disconnect between what this team seems like it could be good at offensively and what Hugh Freeze wants to do offensively. In year one, that's an understandable disconnect, because he's playing with a hand that he had very little control over. In year three, when you've recruited basically every starter on the team, I guess that's not true, because like Jeremiah Wright and Brendan Frazier have become starters this season. But like for the most part, he's recruited every other.
It's his team.
Yeah, every other player on the team is Damari, right? Like, there are a handful of guys
but
you're right.
Damari got two touches.
No,
in the Texas A&M game,
despite being voted a captain by his teammates, you know, who seem to think by voting him a captain that he should have a larger role on the offense. I don't know, but it's and I think especially the disconnect between what Hugh Freeze seems to want this offense to do and what Jackson Arnold appears to be good at, right? Like that's the one where, I'm not calling for a benching here, but it feels like either you tinker the offense to, I think Jackson is a better version of, he brings to the table a lot of what Robbie brought to the table.
Oh, but except I think he's a much better passer.
But he's a much better passer, but I would still say
a much more accurate passer.
But in general, I would say an offense that you would tailor to Robbie Ashford would probably suit Jackson better than what you were doing right now the last two weeks.
And I agree with that.
And if you're not gonna do that, if you're not gonna pivot the offense to what you had when it was more of a run first threat at quarterback, then I think you probably should consider looking at one of the other two guys to run this offense, because I think what you've run the last 2 weeks, certainly it feels like there's a disconnect between what you want your quarterback to be doing and what Jackson Arnold, not only what he's comfortable doing, what he can do, right? Like, because I don't know, like the last couple of weeks, it seems like, I mean, maybe you can try a different quarterback and help. As I would point out,
we have seen that Jackson, that this doesn't seem to be the best offense suited for Jackson. We don't really know about the other guys yet.
And it would be quarterback number five for Hugh Freeze. Mm-hmm. The next guy to start a game would be the fifth quarterback to start a game for Hugh Freeze at Auburn. And that's, I mean, if you...
Now, that wasn't a big deal for Steve Spurrier, but...
It wasn't, but Spurrier got more results
out
of the guys...
winning with the quarterback... You know, musical chairs.
If Spurrier had Hugh Freeze's win-loss record in conference in, you know, in year three.
That would not have sat well with the Bull Gators. All right, we're just underway here on this Friday edition of The Drive. Weekend where Auburn is off, and we were talking before we came on the air. I mean, you look around the country, and there are an awful lot of ball games that appear to be, you know, fairly easy choices. They look like the favorite should be able to win. We'll talk about those games. We've got high school football, huge high school football going on here in town tonight with Auburn hosting Central.
Yeah, we're going to talk with Jacob Goins at 5 o'clock. Okay. He's going to call in from the Duck and tell us about Auburn and Central. Looking forward to that. It is a home game, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I wanted to make sure of that before I – so there are four SEC games tomorrow. All of them, the line's at least a touchdown. How surprised would you be to see an upset? You've got Florida.
I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be a little surprised.
What's the likeliest upset on the board to you? It's not Kentucky.
Maybe Mississippi State.
It's not Texas Kentucky A&M. Georgia.
No, it's not Kentucky Georgia.
You've got State at A&M.
Florida. That one maybe. Although it sure seems like a lot of people are talking that one up, and the more that gets talked up as an upset, the less I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't like A&M. I don't like State coming off of a loss like that at home and having to gather themselves up and go on the road and face
right.
a team that I think is better. That's a recipe for disaster.
I just don't think that Vandy is in a good position heading to Tuscaloosa. Alabama's not still going to be celebrating the Georgia win last week like they were a year ago and looking past Vandy. I think they want to get the point across to Vandy because Diego Pavia, he had some comments earlier this week. You saw those?
Yeah, but that's him, and he hadn't lost yet. You know what I mean? I kind of like that he's unapologetically him.
Yeah, well, it's not like he's never lost,
and it's not. But and Bama, you know, already has the axe to grind because of last year's game and the celebrating they've done. I would just think.
I think the matchup of Alabama's passing offense and Vandy's secondary is scary. Yeah. Vandy's got to control the ball like they do, and I mean they're gonna need to grind out first downs and end up drives with points.
My assumption is four blowouts in the conference tomorrow. I don't think you get a close game.
I'd be more surprised probably with an upset than I would be with four blowouts.
Yeah, I kind of think we get four really chalky blowouts tomorrow. If we don't, you know, maybe Florida put it together on their bye week. I'd find that a little surprising. I wonder. I mean, maybe some of that would be about Texas still needing to figure things out.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. I mean, I do wonder about Texas's offense. That offense had struggled against the Florida defense. If Florida's still, you know, into it mentally, then that's going to be a low-scoring ball.
I will offer this prediction, and again, I think it's two blowouts. If one of the two games is close, my guess is it's Vandy-Bama and not State A&M. If one of those two games is close tomorrow, my guess is that it's Vandy putting up more of a fight. Just because I think I trust Vandy more than State.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, if Vandy can control it and maybe force a turnover,
but I'm still thinking for. And again, I just think Kentucky. Yeah. Like I think it. You know, Georgia. And maybe this is the trap, like the Ole Miss game earlier this year. I would understand if Georgia was a 35-point favorite at home against Kentucky. I just don't know I don't know what to really expect from Kentucky against Georgia on either side of the ball. And Kentucky made mistakes against South Carolina, including a couple South Carolina didn't take advantage of. But Kentucky made a couple that South Carolina did take advantage of. And, yeah, in Athens, that's just a nightmare. I just think that's, you know, the pro-Kentucky side, and maybe this is how Vegas makes money here, the pro-Kentucky side feels...
I just don't see...
You got to squint.
I don't see what... Yeah, you, no kidding. Yeah, you really, really have to look hard.
To find the margins.
Pro there.
To find some. You want to get to Yellowhammer before we go to
break?
Yeah,
let's do that. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Let me run through all this and then I'll get out of the way. I view football, offensive football, that is, when it applies to defense too, but there's two parts. The line of scrimmage and everybody else. And if you have a substandard line of scrimmage, you're just not going to have an offense that's all that good. You can blame the quarterback. You can blame the play calling. It's just going to be limited. And we have a history going all the way back to Malzahn of substandard offensive lines, and Harsin didn't do anything about it. And then Bo Nix got out of here because he knew he couldn't do anything with that. And when we hired Freeze, you guys said it's going to take 3 or 4 years to get a good, high-quality offensive line back together. And we're still an offensive line in progress. We can run block, but we're not that good on the pass protection. And if you want to pass, no matter if it's a long pass, you need a lot of time. But you need some time for any pass. And so defenses crash our quarterback, shutting that down, shutting the time down. And so, you know, the thing to do is if they got their ears pinned back and here comes those edge rushers, run right at them. Block them, you know, anyway. So you run at them. And the best play in football, I think, is running right off tackle, because the thing is, most of the defense is out of position to do anything about it. You get one block, shake a tackle, and you're gone. So we need to be a running football team. And then when we pass, they'll be so concentrated on the run that it'll be more effective, and we'll do more with less. And so
makes a lot of sense to me, Yellowhammer. Yeah, it's just we haven't seen that philosophy seem to be embraced by the coaching staff.
And too many other places. I get what you're saying about, you know, you recruit offensive linemen out of high school, and then when they're in their third or fourth or fifth year of you know, college football, they can help you out on the offensive line. I get that. Too many other coaches are finding ways to show progress, right? Between, you know, before the end of year three, when you inherit trouble
on the offensive lineman too.
That's exactly right. Well, and Auburn.
Well, Auburn was supposed to, though. That's the thing. Everyone who rates players, and you know, Hugh Freeze was very proud to tell everybody that he'd heard from NFL scouts that six of his guys projected as draftable players, and not to the NFL from what I've seen.
Well, I'll just say this, that run blocking is way easier than pass blocking, because it's a whole different skill set. You've got to be up on your feet, agile, quick-footed. You've got to be able to dance backwards, really. And, you know, it's just a whole different thing to learn, and that's still a thing in progress, and I would say.
You know, something else to think about with the offensive line. You're absolutely right about pass blocking, Yellowhammer, but I would point out, too, that maybe because there was pressure to win from the moment he got here, although I think people sort of understood the deal the first year, Hugh Freeze has not really bet on youth on the offensive line. No. He's gone and tried to find
Connor Lue.
Connor Lue's the one exception to that, but I think for the most part, Hugh Freeze has gone out and brought in guys that represented 1 year solutions or 2 year solutions. I know Dylan Wade's been here the whole time, but guys that were sort of limited on their eligibility but could help out right now, and you sort of find yourself on the treadmill doing that, because if you don't, Connor Lue again being the exception, guys aren't taking their lumps year over year in the program and improving that way, mm-hmm. and you're sort of hoping, and Auburn's hoped a lot about the transfer portal, hope they found the right guy in the portal. It feels like they're still wishing and hoping.
Well, the only thing I'd say is that we need just a little more patience, because here's the best thing about any coach: can they recruit? And he's shown he can do that.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, the problem with just saying be patient, Yellowhammer, is that thus far they haven't shown that they are willing to try to run the ball, which is the thing that Auburn is the best suited to do. So if you keep trying to throw the ball and your offensive line can't protect, and your best weapons are your running backs or the best way to move the ball is running it, and you don't do it, there's not going to be much patience.
I do wonder, though, and we appreciate the phone call, Yellowhammer, great stuff. I do wonder, you know, amid talk of personnel changes, do you kick the tires on a Dre Carter or a Ty Buster or
Cale Ellis,
or what move do you move Connor over to guard and try Ellis at center? Do you bench Connor?
I don't know. I think you maybe move Cale Ellis over and keep keep Connor there.
I just think there's a lot of different. Is Tyler Johnson in the picture?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if we have a viewing window next week, and hear what Hugh Freeze has to say. All right, we're just underway.
Because would you say it's fair to describe the performance against A&M as the kind of performance that can lead to those type of changes for an offense? You could see a new face or two at one of several positions?
At a couple of spots. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, just underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive.
You might see more Frazier. It was probably the best game probably the best game he's ever played at Auburn. Mm-hmm. But some other spots where Auburn could maybe turn to a youth movement.
We'll get to our first break. Who have we got hanging on?
We got Momo on the phone.
All right, hang on. We'll be right back with Momo of your calls here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into The Drive. Yeah, Andy told us they're working on some new liners for us. So looking forward to that. I don't want to get rid of the Bruce, though. I mean, we keep Bruce and add Steve.
I'll tell you what, we can keep Bruce grandfathered in.
Yeah,
you know, sort
absolutely.
Of. And I would welcome Steven. I still want to talk to LV at some point before the season gets mm-hmm. started. Women's basketball on the way shortly, alongside Auburn men's basketball and of course the rest of football season. Wings 94.3, you're home for a lot of that. ESPN 106.7 carried women's basketball last season. I think we're doing that again this year as well with Coach Vickers. And speaking of Wings 94.3, Jacob Goings will be anchoring coverage tonight. He'll be on the call for Auburn and
Rob Pate, Jack Hutton.
Auburn and Central, always one of the biggest games in the state in high school football.
Top five matchup once again.
And we'll talk to Jacob at 5 o'clock. Speaking of fives, right? Appropriately enough, we will talk to Jacob at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. He will call in from the stadium before he broadcasts tonight's Auburn Central game. You can catch that on Wings 94.3.
All right, let's get back to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
I double-checked to make sure. It's Momo on the phone. How you doing, bud? Momo, go.
Uh-oh, he's gone.
He got cold feet, maybe?
No.
I don't know.
No, Momo.
No, Momo. All right, well, I was looking forward to talking to Momo. And he hung on through the break, and then I guess we lost him right there.
We just lost right there at the start. We'd love to hear from you. You know, your thoughts.
I feel like that's a bait and switch because we teased hey, Momo's gonna be on the phone, so hopefully he calls back. I made this point yesterday with Pascal Bill. A lot of the problems that Hugh Freeze is facing can be, I think you could say you could use them to describe the situation Billy Napier is in.
I think so. Absolutely.
He's got a big home game against a national champion mm-hmm. contender. If you want to still call Texas that, I think it's fair.
Oh, they're top 10 still.
Yeah. Okay. So he's got a and Georgia, I think, can accurately be described as such too, even though they just lost a home game for the first time in forever. Like, he's got a home game coming off a bye against a national championship contender type of team. He's got a chance to win everyone back by delivering. I think a lot of if Auburn made breakthroughs offensively and beat Georgia the way people thought Auburn was going to at the beginning of the season.
Right. Or just 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I think everyone's back. I think everybody's back. I think now could it erode again?
Sure.
Sure. But that night?
Sure it could. But talking about Billy Napier, that's the sort of the situation he had last year. They came on, played really well down the stretch, got outstanding performances from DJ Lagway. Now you've got a couple of teams that are ranked. Let's see, they're both in the 120s or lower in third down efficiency in Arch Manning and DJ Lagway's offenses.
You win those games, everybody's back. If you don't, but it's probably your last chance to win everybody back. I think for Napier. Even though they got more big games on the schedule, because that's the schedule.
Yeah. He got folks back last year, and then the expectations are, okay, now you're over the hump, and you're going to do it, and Florida's gone out and just, you know, been awful offensively.
And the same way he needed Tennessee last year to hold off the Barbarians at the gate, I think he needs Texas. I think he needs to win that game tomorrow, and if he doesn't, you could see a new coach at Florida on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the same thing, you know, a lot of the same characteristics are true of the situation that Hugh Freeze is in next weekend when he hosts Georgia.
Oh yeah, I agree. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline.
Spectre.
Hey, Spectre.
Hey, bud.
Mo, no go, no mo.
Yeah, no mo, mo, mo. You know what? I think the call was just going to be so-so.
Oh, no. No mo.
You must be a first-time caller. That's the first time I heard of that name.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, I was calling because I was listening to you talking to Yellowhammer about the running game. You know, you know how I am about the offensive line. I have not seen any evidence that we can run against an SEC defense.
No, but you know what? We haven't tried run really against an SEC defense.
I mean, maybe,
Spectre, maybe the coaches feel like we can't, and that's why they haven't tried, but seeing the results from passing the ball, you might as well give it a shot.
Did I read the stats wrong on that? Did we have 37 running attempts against Oklahoma?
Well, I think 20-something of them were credited to Jackson Arnold, including the 9 or 10 sacks. So there were only 13 running attempts by the running backs, and the other 20 something were quarterback attempts, or the reverse.
Yeah, a lot of the running attempts in the game were called drop back passes that turned into runs by Jackson. I'd say the percentage of called drop back passes went up a week later against Oklahoma against A&M.
Yeah, well, I guess again we'll find out what we got because I'm believing they have no choice but to run the ball. And unless they go in there with a new offensive game plan and with a different quarterback to throw Georgia out of throw them off key or something. But Knight, he can run the ball just as well, if not better, than the other guy. So
see, I think I
think Ashton Daniels is probably your, if you want to run the ball with a quarterback, he's probably your next best bet. I think Deuce is probably the guy that if you wanted to drop back and throw it, that's the guy you'd
get. Yeah, I think if you wanted to run the ball with the quarterback, though, you'd call more designed runs with this quarterback. If you're going to switch, like we said earlier in the show, Spectre, like I think you either adjust the plan with Jackson or you try another quarterback and keep throwing the ball 70-something percent of the time, but there are ample reasons to wonder if a pass-heavy approach is going to work. You like the receivers, but there's questions about the pass protection, and if you go from Jackson to one of these other guys, I mean, Ashton Daniels had a mixed bag at Stanford the last couple of years, but it was major conference college football against the Pac-12.
He had
and
a couple
ACC.
Of 300-yard passing games.
And with Deuce, he's making the jump to college football, and I thought he looked kind of overmatched against Ball State when he went in the game a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I thought Deuce was a dual threat quarterback.
Well, he's a guy who is athletic, but he's not one that is as likely to tuck it and run as Jackson or Ashton.
I'm surprised in that. Really am.
That's sort of like Jeremy Johnson. He could run. I mean, the thing is, when you watched him, I remember watching him against Auburn High and him running just right past Reuben Foster and Allen Evans and guys like that, but he didn't like to run. And I think Deuce would prefer to throw the ball. I'm not comparing him to Jeremy Johnson, but I'm just saying he's more that style. Yeah. That has the ability, he can run, but he would rather, keep the ball and find a receiver than run.
Well, again, we're playing Georgia, and if they attempt to run it, and Georgia ain't gonna let us open any holes. I can tell you right now, Georgia defense is gonna swallow us up. And I don't, we've been through this for the last 2 years. We keep playing the same quarterback because the offensive line ain't any good. I heard somebody say the other day, Well, we need an apology to Peyton Thorne. You know, they may be right. It may have been an offensive line the whole time.
Not just the offensive line, but also and I would say play calling.
Play calling that really wants
to throw the ball and lean on that offensive line to pass protect when there might be some success running the ball.
Yeah, you're right. But you know, Peyton Thorne's got hold some blame in there too. I mean, you call a play, pass play, but don't throw it to the other team. Mm-hmm. You know. But anyway, I'm so frustrated. I don't know what to do.
I tell you what.
Let me add this to you guys. Remember 2017 when Gus was his job was on the line. I mean, he ain't going to call the plays. Yeah, he is going to call the plays. I'm going to be general manager. No, I'm going to call the plays.
His job was on the line against Georgia. Georgia came to town, and his job was on the line.
That first time, yeah. And Auburn, you know, really played well that ball game.
But not only that, we beat Georgia and Alabama, and I'd be darned if he didn't get a pay raise and an extended contract.
Yep.
Is that what's going to happen if we beat Georgia?
No. I don't think you'll see a contract extension.
I'll tell you what, 2017, that team played in the SEC championship game. Hugh Freeze turns this into an SEC championship game appearance. There might be a new contract on the table.
We would have won that game. I tell you right, we would have won that game if he hadn't worn out our running back.
Carry on.
Yeah, as soon as Carry On pulls up against Alabama in the Iron Bowl, you're really worried about what that means because 17 was a different team with him on the field.
Well, you guys have a nice weekend. I'll talk to you Monday.
Great stuff.
Appreciate it. All right, we need to get to break. We're gonna do. We're gonna try again. I believe Momo's back with us.
Got Jay.
All right, guys, we got to get to our bottom of the hour break. You'll be the first two when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Now open in Casita, Alabama.
382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's get right back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Jay is up next. Hey, Jay.
Hey, gentlemen, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Good, good. Great show. Got about two or three things on the run by you. I was talking to a buddy of mine yesterday, and the discussion of what I would call the state of Auburn University football was a very hot and heavy conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about a certain coach that is interested in getting back into coaching. And I don't know if you've heard if there's any rumors that Minister Freeze, I sometimes call him that. If things don't work out for him, meaning if he wins 6-6, 7-5, I think,
anything worse. Are you talking there's someone two. Who has been an SEC coach? I was mentioning it to the guys yesterday.
There's two names that you could be on the verge of saying when it comes to getting back into coaching.
Yep.
That
is the name Meyer. Were y'all referring to Mr.
Urban
Meyer.
You know, we talked about Urban Meyer when Auburn was looking for a coach after Harsin, and my position on the matter was a lot of great college football coaches have failed miserably at the NFL level. So I'm not going to hold what happened in the Jaguars against him too much. My thing is, if Urban Meyer is motivated and healthy and really wants to win at a college football job that he thinks where he thinks he can win, I think he could be a pretty dangerous force for the next couple of years in college football, potentially. But he's got to be all those things.
Right.
He's got to be healthy, and he's got to genuinely want the job. Yeah, and he's got to
be very motivated.
Yeah.
Have that burning desire.
I mean, he is the second most successful college football coach of this century, and that can't be dismissed. And he won at more than one place which not very many great championship coaches do. I thought you were about to say, so at first I thought you were going to say John Gruden, who's also made it clear that he wants to get back into coaching and coach at the SEC level. And then Bill had a different name.
No, I heard from some folks down in the southern part of the state that Jimbo Fisher is very interested in in getting back into coaching and in the SEC.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
I know.
You know what though, and I'll say this: that's the situation. I don't think it's right for Auburn at all. At all, because I think you could probably go younger and feel better about, and it's probably, and it's too far from Jimbo's.
Then Jimbo, yes.
Yeah. It's not the craziest idea at Kentucky. If he really wants to be in an SEC school.
I don't know if
and
Jimbo
he,
feels like he could win at Kentucky.
Okay, well, that's, I don't know. I don't know if, I mean, if he's as great as he's supposed to be, he should be able to win there.
Yeah.
But my thing is this with Kentucky. Kentucky, to me, is a safe area. And the reason I say it's safe is because the expectations at Kentucky isn't the same for football as it is for basketball.
Oh, not even close.
That basketball coach, if he doesn't win, they're going to run him out of town.
Yep.
First thing, smoke. They will. Now, the second thing is this. What is the – if Coach Freeze goes 7-5 or 8-4, what's going to be – what do you think is going to be the next course of action? Are we going to keep him or are we going to say, Coach, we're moving in a different direction. We got to look elsewhere.
You know, if Auburn goes 8-4 now, if he goes 8-4, I think it's tough. It's going to be really interesting to see what does the offense do?
Yeah.
Does Auburn go 8-4 with the offense still as stagnant as it's been the last couple of weeks? If that's the case, then you would see some of the stuff we went through a few years ago. You'd have the pressure for Hugh Freeze to step back, let somebody else come in, call plays, and then you'd always be wondering, whose offense is it?
Okay.
I mean, at the same time, 8-4 would represent 8-4 would represent a turnaround from where things seem to be headed right now.
Best year that Auburn's had since 2019. That's sad.
If he turned this into 8-4 and one of the eight was Alabama or Georgia.
There's no way he's gone then. No way he's gone, if that's the case. You know that, Jay.
I was looking at Georgia, Bama, Oklahoma, and A&M as being the four, and then everybody else being the eight.
I wonder what kind of support's there on Sunday morning if you lose to Georgia. I wonder what it looks like the day
now,
after.
If you lose to Georgia 31-30.
Yeah.
There'll probably be people going, "Hey, we're a lot closer than we thought."
Yeah.
Just because they'd see some offense.
I mean, if you want to say significant offensive progress or a win, I kind of think you need both.
If you did that, though, all right. So that would at least keep the Wolves away. And if you did, as Jay is saying, if you beat Missouri, Arkansas, Kentucky, at Vandy, and Mercer. And you're then
that's not 8-4 though, right? If you are you talking about losing,
you're 8-3 to Georgia, going to the Bama game.
Okay,
then.
You're talking about losing close to Georgia in a game where the offense plays better.
Yeah. You'd be 8-3 going to the Bama game, and if you lose that one, you're 8-4. It would stink again to lose to Bama and Georgia, but
that's probably the only path. Yeah, because I think offensive progress and a loss to Georgia would maybe buy you Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but you'd
then you need to beat Missouri to get to Arkansas and so forth on down the line.
Because basically, from what I'm seeing, Bama's strong even with the board. Georgia, they're going to be strong. They're going to bounce back against Bama.
I saw a statistic yesterday that had the most talented teams in the country. Auburn was 13th, but Georgia was number one. Alabama was number two as far as the 4- and 5-star talent on the roster.
Right, and both of these teams can be beat. I mean, anybody can be beaten on any given Saturday. We just have to call the right plays and quit doing false starts. That's about it. But if it goes 7-5, I just don't think he'll stay if it goes 7-5.
Yeah, I think that trying to position everything is moving.
And I'm not trying to run the guy out of town. Yeah. Trust me. Look, I'm not trying to run him out of town. I'm just being realistic.
Trying to sell that things are
on the table.
Trying to sell that things are headed in the right direction. I think it's 7-5. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets tougher and tougher more losses you add to that list.
Right. You know, like I said, this is disclaimer. I'm not trying to get him fired. I'm not trying to get nobody fired. But we have to be realistic in that folks who write checks, if they are not happy, they're gonna find their coach elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. You're right. All right, Jay. Good stuff. 334-321-1390. What we got?
You want to try Slack real quick?
Yeah, let's get to Slack before we get to our final break. Hey, Slack.
What's going on?
Hey, man, it's been a while.
What's
How
up,
you doing?
Buddy?
Slack is back.
Oh, man.
That's good.
Oh, it's
good
reassuring.
To hear you, man.
I'm bringing the mojo back too, as well.
Boy, we need it.
It's like home cooking. Slack, what's been missing this season? You'd know.
Well, I've heard y'all for a few days, trying to ingest everything that you're talking about. Let's go back, okay? Just say we don't get screwed in the Oklahoma game and we win that ball game. We wouldn't be having that discussion today.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Despite everything
else,
we
got screwed.
Yep,
we got screwed in that ball game. So how do you justify losing it? We didn't lose that ball game. They took that ball game from us. And let me bring up something else. I've been seeing on the ACC network where every time they go to the replay booth.
Yeah,
I love it.
You get a chance. You
Why
hear all
the
conversation.
The SEC put pressure on the SEC to do the same thing.
I am 1,000% with you. I mean,
you want to know a funny story, Slack? I asked Commissioner Sankey about that a year and a half ago at SEC Media Days. I asked if the new ESPN deal and everything being streamlined with one network, if you could have, like the NBA, conversations with the actual replay officials or conversations with the league instead of a rules expert who doesn't really work for the
He's
league.
He's not in on the conversation either.
A retired guy sort of telling us what he assumes is happening in those conversations. And, I mean, Sankey sort of, he thought about it and sort of laughed it off and said he didn't see it in the foreseeable future when I asked him about it. But
Slack's right. Yeah, you're seeing it at the ACC.
And we don't want the heat.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Because, yeah, I would have loved to have heard explanations for all three of those. Mm-hmm. How did you let the first one go? And then on the incomplete, the completion which was then incomplete and the incompletion which was then complete, how do you justify those? I would have loved to have heard those conversations.
And God rest his soul, Mike Slive laughed off the idea of injury reports a long time ago. You were there. You remember that, Bill. So these things can happen sometimes. Just give them time.
I would like to see it.
Yep.
I would absolutely like to see it.
I think it's great that the ACC is doing it and the SEC is not now. That's another thing. It's like, okay, you're supposed to be the big bad conference. Do it right.
And I would think ESPN would probably prefer that kind of conversation to just a retired rules expert if it's on the table.
Of course. Going forward, why does Auburn have to be the team that going back to the Oklahoma game, and teams have been doing Auburn the same way for a long time? I've been an Auburn fan for 50 years, and I see teams running pick plays on us every game. Why didn't we do the same thing? Why do we always got to be the good guy that's trying to run a straight route just straight down the field? Why are we not running crossing routes?
Good question there, Slack. I don't know.
Well, they sniffed it out against Oklahoma a couple times and correctly called the OPI. But you're right. I think I think people in general are wondering. I mean, call them pick plays if you want, but the crossing route feels like there's some opportunity for that with these receivers, and you haven't seen it as much. But we got to go to break.
Yeah, we do. Sorry about that, Slack. But, yeah, we are way behind. Got to get to our final break. Stick with us here as we continue with hour number one of the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final minute or so. Brian is on the line, but, I mean, we want to give him plenty of time. The music is just about to start to wrap things up for hour number one.
We're gonna call Jacob at some point in the first half of hour number two. Yeah. I think he's going to call in to us when he's ready to go.
Brian's hanging on, right?
Brian's going to start two.
Brian will be on with us when we come back to start hour number two. We've got some baseball. If we have a chance, Butch Thompson met with the media today. Fall baseball practice got started. But right now we need to step aside for our top of the hour break. We're halfway done here on the Friday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Bill and Dan here in the studio on this Friday.
Get a lot of baseball playoff action tomorrow. We were just chatting about that.
All four games tomorrow in the division series, and ESPN 106.7 is going to have a lot of baseball. We've got all kinds of things coming up this weekend. We can run those down here in just a little while, but why don't we get to the phones, because Brian has been hanging on since the end of hour number one. Hey, Brian.
Hey, bud.
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, all good, man. Great show. I just want to comment, on the people asking that we need to practice patience, and then the reference to practicing patience is saying, because the offensive line is just poor this year. I mean, to me, that's not a very good argument. Like, Hugh recruited these guys, mm-hmm. and Hugh is coaching these guys. So, to me, that's kind of a circle logic there to say, well, we got to practice patience because, they suck on the offensive line. Well, yes, they do suck on the offensive line. So, I just don't really get that argument. And then the question that I originally called to ask was, can you point to a position group on the offense that is coached well? Because I cannot.
Yeah, I mean, I
don't want to describe the running backs as poorly coached based on what we've seen this year, right? Like, I don't want to. I mean, it feels good because the one time Auburn really leaned on him was Baylor, and they played well, and increasingly their job is pass protection in the offense. But I don't want to say that. Without exaggerating, I thought Brandon Frazier was the one player from Saturday who could come away thinking he had a pretty good game on the Auburn offense. Right? There's one guy in the Texas A&M game who could probably say from the Auburn offense that he played okay. And I've always liked, I've always thought that Ben Agamawa seems to know what he's doing, and Auburn's gotten production out of the tight end position the last couple of years. I know some folks thought Rivaldo would do more. I think there are some valid criticisms to throw around at different positions based on what you've seen from the offense this season and especially the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it's really not just this season. Like, it's hard for me to point to a player on offense that has come in to this program since Freeze has been here and has gotten incrementally better. They've gotten better, and you may could find one or two there. But to me, players are coming into our program on offense and at best staying neutral. Mm. But in a lot of times, they're getting worse. And I just don't understand. That's why I can't understand the people asking to practice patience. I can understand practicing patience with a coach who you can see, hey, we're getting better here. We're getting better there. I don't see that on that side of the ball. And if that's not happening, if we're not getting better in the one thing that you're good, that you were supposedly known for, what good are you?
Yeah, that was Kevin Skarbinski the other day. Absolutely right. I mean, that sadly, that's the same thing we were hearing that, with Gus is, who is getting better, who is being developed, and yeah, it's hard. I'm trying to think of somebody who I feel like came in, and we feel like they're just a whole lot better than they were then.
It's the story of it's the story of a lot of coaches that had some success on the recruiting trail, but ultimately found their administrations doomed. Right? You think about Gus, if you want to say it that way. Jimbo.
Oh, absolutely.
That's Jimbo at A&M, where he was winning recruiting battles and getting players at certain positions people were excited about. The results didn't change. And in fact, in some cases, you know, they got worse. And it was at some point, where do you point? Billy Napier at Florida is probably going through a lot of this right now. More and more in college football, I know there's the occasional CEO, but if you don't own one side of the ball and take responsibility when it's unacceptable, you know, yeah, I think it's you know, there are too many options out there that do take ownership of that one side of the ball. And in this era, the offense. I mean, you're seeing more and more coaches that are...
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you see a lot of coaches that their side of the ball may be really, really good and the other side of the ball is not. And then you go, well, gee, let's just go ahead and bring somebody in on the other side. Now, there are situations where... I know there are a lot of defensive coaches that feel like their offensive coaches aren't helping them because, you know, that's one of the things Hugh Freeze talks about. And you wonder, one of the things he does differently now than he used to is he used to go breakneck speed. We've talked about it a few times this week. He used to go fast, 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 tempo, tempo, tempo. But then
this is at previous places in his career?
Yes, but then he said he'd come to realize that that's hurting his defensive coordinator and the defensive side of the ball. Well, you know what? Right now, he needs to be concerned with the offensive side of the ball and getting it better. But yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, Brian. I mean, I'm as we've been talking, I don't know that I could tell you somebody who I feel like has just really blossomed and improved tremendously since they arrived offensively.
I mean, Jarquez took to his playing time when it went up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? After like Tank Bigsby. But
look, Connor Lou's better, but I mean, an offensive lineman.
And you're still
you sure hope is going to be better.
Now some of that, Brian, I think you make a really good point, but some of that is probably because you've seen a coach so reliant on the portal the last couple of years, right? You're bringing in.
Yeah,
you're bringing
even the portal players get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Xavier Chaplin. The guy is not good, guys. He's not good. And all we heard.
He sure struggled on the road. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
All we heard is how good this guy was at Virginia Tech. And I didn't put my eyeballs on him very much, but I heard how good he was. And all we heard in the offseason was, guys, I've got six offensive linemen that could play in the NFL.
Yeah.
That was from his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a lot of patience when the guy tells me that.
He said that NFL scouts were telling
him he had six guys that were on their draft board.
We were at that press conference, Brian. He had six draftable, and that's the word he used. You know, and I'm starting to wonder if he was talking about the military, but he said he had six draftable offensive linemen. I do wonder if, you know, when people say it's a personnel issue. He had people in the preseason telling him,
"Yeah,
any struggles on your offensive line shouldn't be a personnel issue."
And guys, I'll leave y'all with this. I know there's other people that want to get on, but I'm afraid, and I've thought this since his first year, but I'm afraid that we've hired a guy that had a good system 10 years ago and could recruit.
Did. Yep.
And the problem is, I'm afraid that system has been neutralized now, and he has no idea how to adjust. I don't know that this guy's ever been a good developer of players. I think he was a great recruiter, still is, and I think he had a system that people struggled to figure out in a lot of games. And I don't know that system hasn't been figured out, and we don't have a pivot. I appreciate it, guys.
Good stuff, Brian. The question coming out of A&M or the question coming out of Oklahoma was, what's going to be different about your plan a week later?
Mm-hmm.
Because even with the problems with the officiating,
that plan isn't going
to
work.
And even though you got close to winning in the Oklahoma game, and you can point to a couple of borderline calls or mistakes by the officiating, there were still things to take out of that game about what works and what doesn't offensively for this team. And to take that information and then deliver the performance you saw against Texas A&M, I mean, yeah, you can question any position group on the field for the offense and wonder what else do you have on the depth chart. But a lot of that feels like it's philosophical.
Oh, it's and game plan and
schematic
and play calling.
And that's yep. and yeah, and that's something where you can question the you can question, you know, whether or not Auburn is you can question where you go from there if that's the head coach's vision for the offense.
Yep. Why don't we see if we can get Jacob Goins on? I know Jacob will be busy here. We'll go ahead and we can wait and extend that. We can keep Jacob on for maybe like 8 to 10 minutes. Or we can go, you want to get to break early? All right, we'll go ahead and do that. We'll go ahead and get to break. We'll talk a little high school football, huge ball game coming up tonight, Auburn and Central over at the Duck. And we'll talk with Jacob Goins when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive.
The Drive
with Bill Cameron.
On the line, but also the voice of the Auburn High School Tigers. Huge ball game on tap over at the Duck tonight as the Auburn High School Tigers hosting the Central Red Devils. And Jacob Goins joining us here in the 5 o'clock hour on The Drive. Jacob, big, big ball game. This is what it's all about in 7A football.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't get bigger than this, guys. I appreciate you having me on. And, it truly doesn't get bigger than Auburn and Central Phoenix City. It's a game that it means a lot to the people involved anyway, just because the kids grew up together and you're just about 45 minutes right up the road. But, man, it just seems like always goes through either Auburn or Phoenix City, and I expect it to be the same way this season and the same way tonight.
Yeah, it seems like it's that way in just about every sport, too. I mean, Auburn High has, had some success, a little more success against Pat Nix and the Red Devils here over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, a big win last year was the one that kind of highlights everything, right? There's been so many years where Auburn and Central typically play twice in a season because they'll meet in the regular season, and then they meet somewhere along the way in the postseason, and that seems to be about in every sport too, Bill. And so last year's game is the one that Auburn High fans choose to remember because a 38-33 win in Phoenix City, where you then went on to win the region and, of course, have one of the best regular seasons you've ever had for Auburn High. That's a big deal. And so Auburn's going to try and build on that from a year ago, and they get the Red Devils at home here at the Duck. And, man, we're really looking forward to it. Two high-powered teams, offensively, defensively, both teams 5-1, undefeated in region play, and you head into the backstretch, man, and winning this type of game, it doesn't secure the region yet, but, man, do you just catapult yourself into a spot to do so.
No, it goes a long way, and we were talking with Jason Caldwell, who's going to be over there checking out the ball game as well this evening, part of that huge crowd that should be on hand on what is a perfect evening for football. But, one of the things Jason pointing out is, you know, with the playoff schedule, the format changing a little bit, and the schools now from our region are going to be matched up with those Birmingham schools. So it is very important to be as high up in the seedings from your region, and a win over Central would go a long way in doing that because, I mean, these are the two best regions in the state. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah, it's not even close. I mean, between the East Alabama region for us, Region 2, and then the Birmingham region, it really is not even close. And, you know, playoff projections right now are, you know, you can look at them, but it's the same way as looking at the college football playoff projections. You can look at them, and they're fun, but they're not definite yet. And Auburn's bounced around between having to go to Thompson, now hosting Prattville. I mean, it really just depends on if you're the 1 or 2 seed and you get to host the first round, or if you're the 3rd or 4 seed out of your region and you got to travel in that first game. But with those playoff formalities and things like that, right, if you host in round 1 and you play the team in round 2 and they traveled the week before, you have to go to them. Seed lines don't matter at that point.
Right.
It's all about travel and fairness and all that mess that the AHSAA goes through. And so it is what it is. You got to play the teams in your bracket and you got to win them all anyway. But beating Central tonight would be so huge for Auburn, because you look ahead, guys, you've got Smith Station next week. Carver will be here at the Duck in 2 weeks. That's the other undefeated team in the region. Mm-hmm. And then you go down to Dothan to wrap up the regular season. So it's not do or die, must win or anything like that tonight. But again, it just it really propels you into going on to win the region. Plus, you beat a team that has your number over the history of years with the Central Red Devils.
Yeah, that region with teams like Dothan and Opelika is yep. still you know, pretty tough. But the game tonight, Auburn and Central, has just had a huge say in deciding who takes home the region title and gets that one seed in the postseason. Auburn in the top five yet again this season. What can you say about how they've been doing it, especially offensively?
Yeah, well, I actually, believe it or not, I want to start with the defense, because they're the ones that have played just out of their minds. In the three region games that Auburn High has played, they're allowing less than 6 points per game, and that's against Opelika, Jag, and then Enterprise as well. And so we're hoping to keep that up tonight. The defensive side of the football, there's just so much talent over there, and guys who are 300 to 330 pounds on the defensive line, and you've got P4 linebackers there, D1 linebackers there, and some corners that I'm really excited to see again tonight. But yeah, then offensively, I mean, everything is led by your quarterback in Cason Myers, right? The run game is getting there for Auburn, but you're still missing Omar Mattson, who's at the university, and it's been a running back by committee. But man, Cason Myers, the junior, is just so talented and finds a way to make a play every single time. Auburn goes five wide, guys, most of the time, and it's a lot of fun because you have so many options to get the football to, and I expect them to do that again tonight. You got to try and beat the speed of Central. They've got it on every aspect of their defense as well. And yeah, Cason Myers is the answer, and he's the reason the Tigers are where they are right now.
Two extremely talented teams, there's no question about it, year in and year out. What are the keys for the Tigers tonight?
Not to turn the football over, something they struggled with early. The mm-hmm. reason that they honestly got blown out on the road at Vestavia Hills in week two, and they have not done it since. And that includes Cason Myers in terms of interception. He had 5 in the first 2 games. He's had 0 since. And so not turning the football over, cashing in the red zone, something Auburn struggled with mightily the first few weeks of the season, but they've really turned it on late. And especially against a team like Central, guys, you know this. If you get to the 20 you're in, you've got to capitalize. You've got to score. You can't kick field goals. You can't settle for no points, right, if you decide to go for it and don't get it. I mean, every point in a game like this one tonight is so valuable. And so not turning the football over, cashing in the red zone, and you got to force a couple of turnovers and get after this quarterback for Central. He's got a similar last name. Auburn fans are going to understand and recognize Bobby Coleman Jr. is the quarterback for the Red Devils. And yes, it's the same Coleman. He's the younger brother mm-hmm. of Cam. And man, he's playing really, really well for Central right now. So if you can make him uncomfortable, possibly force a turnover there, I think Auburn's got a great chance behind this home crowd here at historic Duck Sanford State.
Seen a lot of games in this series, and there's so many times this game can just turn so quickly. Getting off to a quick start is very important, but it seems like I don't know how many times, either late in the first half or late in the ball game, a play and the entire game can turn. So, I mean, it's one of those where should be a great one, should be a great crowd. I mean, there's no question about that, as both both fan bases are always expecting big things from these teams.
Yeah, and they should, right? I mean, these are two of the premier programs in 7A in the state of Alabama, right? That's why mm-hmm. this game is so big. That's why this region is so big. And look, you got to look to that Birmingham region too, guys. I don't know if you've seen who plays up there tonight. You got Thompson on the road at Hewitt Trussville. Yep. That's two of the best teams in the Birmingham region that are going at it. So you've got 4 of the best 5 teams in the state going at each other tonight in some high school football action. So, yeah, the expectations are high. Look, Auburn High is going to pack this place. The students have already filled the student section. I'm looking down to the left here as I peek out of the press box here. And the Central fans are going to travel. It's only 45 minutes, and they will pack that stand on the far side. Them and Opelika travel the best for obvious reasons. And so, yeah, it's a big game. And Auburn looking to beat Central in back-to-back appearances for the first time since 2020. So they've got a lot going for them tonight.
Yeah, no kidding. So, and all the action, just a little over an hour away.
Yes, over on Wings 94.3 or wingsfm.com, or for anybody listening on the Radio Alabama app to your show, you can flip on over and do the same thing on that app as well. Pre-game 6:30, Jack Hutton, Rob Pate, and myself will go on and have some keys to the game. We'll sit down with Auburn High head football coach Keith Etheridge, and then kickoff at 7, and that's the place to be. Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com, and that Radio Alabama app.
Looking forward to it, Jacob. Have a great broadcast, and best of luck tonight.
Appreciate it, guys. Always appreciate the time and enjoy it. Go Tigers.
Jacob Goins joining us. And, yeah, 6:30 the airtime. You know, if you're going over there, you can still check it out. But if you're – tell you what, if you're going to the game, you probably ought to go ahead and head over. Even if you got, you know, you got your tickets, it's going to be tight.
Wings 94.3 here in the local listening area, wingsfm.com. You can stream the game wherever you are in the world with an internet connection. And of course, yeah, really appreciate Jacob and catch him and the doc and Jack on the broadcast tonight. You can catch Jacob on the line. The OTL boys are right before our show here on ESPN 106.7.
Yep, and then tonight Lee Scott over on AU 100. They are at Dadeville as Christian was packing up, getting things ready, heading out there. Again, that's 6:30 pregame and 7 o'clock tip on AU 100. So yeah, they got big high school football going on all over. Even though the university's off this weekend.
Yeah, should be a beautiful night in the area for high school football and hopefully some good games on the docket. It might not be the only Auburn Central game. You know what I mean? With the way the playoffs are structured.
Most years it's not. No. But again, like Jason was saying, Jason Caldwell was saying, tough matchup there in the first round. You know, it had been to Mobile schools. And that's a little easier sledding. And it's tough that they've got the two best regions paired up against each other, you know, in the opening round.
And like I said with Jacob, I mean, Auburn and Central, you know, are at the top of the region, deservedly so. But both Dothan and Opelika can really play, and they've got games that could decide this thing later on too.
And as Jacob pointed out, Carver still hasn't lost. 334-321-1390. I tell you what we'll do is we'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break a little early. We'll let you hear some of the comments. Butch Thompson, who met with the media today, as Auburn baseball starting its fall practice today when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. About a half an hour left here in the Friday show. And as we mentioned, Auburn baseball has been working out, but today, the official start of fall practice. And Butch Thompson met with the media and thought we'd let you hear how did transfer arms as well. And I think it's 21 returnees and 20 new players as they get ready for the start of fall practice.
Yeah, really exciting team after the success last year and great too. And we'll try to run down a Butch at some point between now and the start of the year.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just the depth that the pitching staff looks like they're going to have, and the additions through the transfer portal, I think are going to be you know, something that could push this team, you know, past where they've been able to get to before. And that, of course, they've been to the College World Series, you know, a couple of times under Butch.
So looking at the speaking of baseball, we will have baseball action on ESPN 106.7.
Yeah, I got the National League Division Series, and let's see, that one will be the 6:30 game tomorrow night between the Dodgers and the Phillies. So that will be on following Texas, Florida. We've got Texas, Florida tomorrow on ESPN 106.7, the big SEC football matchup. Following that, Dodgers and Phillies in game one of the National League Division Series.
A lot of really cool stuff here on ESPN 106.7 this weekend. You're not going to want to miss it. And, of course, like we mentioned, the high school football as well, which you can catch on the which you will be able to catch on Wings 94.3 with Jacob and the gang getting started very soon.
334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
Let's talk to a guy who is a sworn enemy of mine for the next week or so. Philly Fanatic.
Ah, yes.
Is hanging out. What's up, pal?
Yeah, I want to talk some baseball. My friends in Philly are saying this is the best team the Phillies have had in a long time. Mm-hmm. But they are definitely sweating when it comes to the Dodgers, because the Dodgers have, wow, they're just loaded with all-stars.
Oh, they are, and Ohtani has just been unbelievable here down the stretch. I mean, it seems like he homers every game, and he seems to lead off most games with homers. Now, of course, he's getting the start there in game one against Christopher Sanchez.
Well, I think Mike Smith's going to throw out the first
cool
baseball with his 500-plus home runs.
I'll tell you what, two very impressive lineups. The question, and I heard somebody the other day say he gave the edge to the Dodgers because of the bullpen. I disagree. Mm-hmm. I think the Phillies' bullpen is, I mean, now that they have Duran anchoring at the end, I think the Phillies have more guys that you feel like you know what you're going to get game in and game out than the Dodgers do.
We didn't talk too much about it. I thought maybe Roky Sasaki could make the occasional bullpen appearance for the Dodgers.
And Emmett Sheehan both maybe guys that they go to, you know, late in ball games.
Yeah, they went to Roky in game two against the Reds. Yep. And with the performances they're getting out of players like, I mean, thinking you can start Ohtani and then having Yamamoto and having Snell like right there, like, yeah, maybe Roky Sasaki is better suited to help this team at the tail end right now. It's crazy when you think about some of the other closers they've brought in from different teams to help out, and none of them seem to be the answer at the moment. But no, I like the Phillies bullpen. You know, especially I mean, Duran was one of the best relievers in baseball this year. That Dodgers lineup, though,
Mookie's been Mookie here down the stretch.
The further he gets away from the wrist injury last year, which I think really impacted his power, Freddie's contact has been top notch all season. He's not quite the power threat he was, but you got to be careful in the playoffs pitching to Freddie Freeman. Max Muncy still showing a little bit of pop, and then of course Ohtani at the top of that. T. Oscar was huge in the Reds game. I like this. I like this Dodger line. Wish Will Smith was healthy, you know. Miss his contribution there, you know, early on there. You know, we'll see if he can be back before the
Phillies
Dodgers
lineup,
season ends.
Phillies lineups, you know, not chopped liver or anything either. No. I mean, Schwarber, a great season for Kyle Schwarber. Bryce didn't have the greatest year. You sort of, you know, keep waiting for him to really explode. But I mean, Trey Turner. I mean, they've got
Real Muto.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stott. Yeah, I mean, they got, you know, there's some good players in the Phillies lineup as well, without question.
It's going to be like a World Series.
You're right.
That are just really, really hot, and got a lot of great players that people want to watch on TV. There's no slouches in these games.
I mean, there's eight teams left, and if you told me the Dodgers and the Phillies were two of the four best, I would listen to that argument, and they're playing each other now. You know, with a chance to go to the NLCS.
Yep. Did Momo ever call?
Momo, you know,
called back.
Yeah, we couldn't get right to him. Hopefully, he calls back, because I am excited to hear from Momo someday.
Yeah, well, we all are.
I was thinking of the Dodgers' first Japanese player Hideo. Like 30 years. I was thinking, yeah, Nomo.
I do not. You know, I got to talk to Momo a little bit when I answered the phone. I do not think.
You don't think that's Hideo?
I don't think it was Hideo Nomo.
Okay.
Oh, no. His accent wasn't Oriental?
Not quite.
He's been in the States for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It's been a while since I talked to Hideo Nomo, but it's not the way he sounded last time I talked to him.
How about David Ross? Do you think he's a fit for the Braves?
Have you heard that story?
I would think that wouldn't be, you know, the craziest thing I've ever heard.
David's been out of professional baseball since he was let go by the Cubs. Mm-hmm. He lives in Bainbridge,
right,
and follows the Braves closely. And he was, I think somebody asked him about this in the last couple of days, and he said, you know, he hadn't heard from Atlanta, but he's flattered to be on lists, and he would love to be.
Yeah, he said it would be amazing.
He'd love to manage again.
I remember when he was on Auburn's team, and they were down at Florida State.
Oh, yeah.
Remember in the regional?
One of the most dramatic moments in Auburn baseball history.
Yeah, he hit that grand slam, and the Auburn announcer there, he's still yelling.
Grand slam.
It seemed like for a while there that Auburn was always having to go down to Florida State to play in
regional.
Yeah.
And it felt like every year.
Yeah, that was terrible. But, how about I want to just talk a little bit about the president of Auburn University and what they can or they want to do as far as the hiring and firing of football players. You know, I've been around enough to, I think, 11 presidents of Auburn University, and only one president got involved in the hiring. And do you remember who he was and what happened to him? You don't remember that?
No, I absolutely remember. I'm trying to remember.
Are we going like Housel and Jay Jacobs back in the day?
No, it's before that. I'll give you a hint.
He's the old.
It was the JetGate scandal.
That's what we're talking about.
That's Housel, isn't it?
No, it was Dr. Walker. Yeah, maybe it was Dr. Walker. Dr. Walker was on the plane.
Right,
he was
right.
The president.
Yes, that's right.
Now, Housel may have been on that.
Right.
Because
Housel was the AD.
You know, it was Bobby Lauter's jet, as you remember. And he was gone, and he was definitely looking at
Bobby
Petrino at Louisville. Yeah, that. I mean, the presidents look at the athletic director as a big rabbit hole, and they don't really want to get involved.
No,
in that.
That's why you should, you know, that's why you should have an AD to be making those decisions.
Exactly right, and that happened to Green when he was terminated by the Gouge because he hired Harsin.
Mm-hmm.
And though Green was a great athletic director, he did a lot of things for other sports, especially women's sports. But I guess back then they wanted freeze.
I think, you know, I would say, Philly, at a lot of schools, you probably don't want to be too involved in athletics as a day-to-day if you're the university president because you got a lot of other things on your plate.
It's not their purview.
At the same time, if you're the president of a school that's historically great in a sport, the success of that sport has outsized importance to the university, and it's not just athletics; it's marketing. It's the university's public image. It's applications and the number of folks who want to go. Like so I can understand why a president would be. You know, a president might be involved at Kentucky in basketball. President might be involved at a school that considers itself a football power.
And it wasn't Hugh back then. Remember, it was Kevin Steele.
How about this debacle with the president of Penn State when Joe Pa got involved?
Yes.
That was unbelievable. I think they both ended up getting fired for that.
I think everyone got fired. I think
anyone who was put in jail, one
or the other. Okay, well, we'll see how. We'll talk next week, and we'll see. The Phillies have to start strong. If they don't win those games at home, then they're in trouble.
You're absolutely right about that.
All right. Enjoyed it.
All right, have a good weekend, Joe. All right. 334-321-1390.
There's a ton of pressure on the home teams
in these five games because
if you lose one,
yep,
then all your opponent has to do is hold serve and you know
win. Win two at home.
You win, yeah. And if you win the two at home, there's tremendous pressure on your opponent to win one of their home to win both of their home games to keep the thing going. But if the Dodgers, yeah, if it's
is it 2-2-1?
It's 2-2-1.
Okay.
And if the Dodgers are going back to LA up, you know, if it's tied at one apiece, it's a huge. It feels like a huge win for the Dodgers, and the pressure moves.
Yeah,
back
that's the thing. If you start, it's not terrible when you're the road team in a best of five. If you know, if you feel like you can win one of those two road games, then you put so much pressure on the other team.
Yeah, Phillies Dodgers game three is Wednesday night in Dodger Stadium, so they're taking Sunday off. They're playing tomorrow, Monday, and then traveling Tuesday and playing game three on Wednesday.
Yeah, we were looking at it. I mean, there's only one. Is that at the right? Only one baseball game on Sunday, or are there two?
There are two games. There's an early game and a late game Sunday.
Both American League?
Both American League, and then the National League picks up on Monday.
I thought maybe they just have the Yankees and the Blue Jays playing.
Game five in the AL, the game fives would be on Friday. If either NL series goes six, how about this? If Dodgers Phillies goes five.
Is that Saturday?
That is during Auburn, Georgia.
Oh, that's
that is
great.
7 o'clock. That is 7 o'clock Saturday night during the Auburn, Georgia game. Cubs Brewers would play earlier in the day.
So the AL Championship Series starts on Sunday, and the NL Championship Series starts on Monday then, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, game one of the NLCS is slated for Monday the 13th, Sunday night the 12th, ALCS, when we get down to four.
And again, tomorrow on ESPN 106.7, we've got Texas at Florida. College football at 2 o'clock, and then following that, it will be the Dodgers and Phillies.
I would say sincerely, though, like if you don't have a horse in the race with the eight teams left in the baseball playoffs, pick one. Find, you know, choose one that you want to see win and get invested in one of those four series. Cause I think you're going to see tremendous baseball. I think that
it's funny. In the National League, it feels like the team that gets the least respect is a team that finished with the best record in the National League, and that's the Brewers.
Yeah, and I think we both kind of think the Cubs are going to win that series, right?
It's hard to just disregard what the Brewers did this year. I mean, Freddie Peralta was outstanding.
Cubs.
They got Trevor McGill back for the postseason.
That series went to the limit too. That Cubs Padres series. So we'll see. But that's another game, another series, starting tomorrow.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. We'll take a look at some of the games around the country as we wind things down here on the Friday Drive.
From day one back in 1907, Auburn Bank.
.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes here on this Friday. We've talked about some of the not a huge day as far as marquee matchups in college football. Biggest game, I would guess, is the Miami-Florida State game tomorrow.
Which is the way it ought to be, right? I mean, for those of us, I mean, especially if you've paid attention to college football since, 1985 or so, like Miami-Florida State should be a huge game. Kind of feels sad when it's like, when that's a game where neither team matters in the bigger picture. Instead, you get a classic. Like I told Doug doing the picks yesterday, this feels like a game that should come down to a field goal. Like, I'm taking Florida State in 4.5 because how many Miami-Florida State games? Wide left.
Right.
Wide right.
Again.
I mean, so I'm thinking maybe this one comes down to the wire. Only a handful of games where both teams are ranked.
No, that's what I mean. It's not a huge day of ranked teams.
If State had held on in overtime and they were undefeated, that game would feature two ranked opponents. Vanderbilt
and we heard David Pascal yesterday saying he didn't see any reason why Mississippi State should have fallen out of the top 25.
No, I'd have considered keeping Mississippi State in my top 25, especially if you're sifting through the one-loss teams looking for one that still deserves a look. Vanderbilt, Alabama is a battle of two teams in the top 25.
Indeed right.
And the
higher ranked team is the one with a loss.
Ooh, and how much of the goodwill?
Did you see it? I mean, it's the first time Vandy has been 5-0 in 70 years.
You were talking earlier about the hypothetical, I think a caller mentioned it, of like if Auburn seemingly makes progress against Georgia in a victory and then takes a step back against Missouri. I feel like you're in the same spot. Maybe,
yeah,
maybe a lot of that. How about this? You're Kalen DeBoer. You just got a huge win on the road in Athens. You're in you're as popular as you've been since you got the job.
Yes, I agree.
Lose to Vanderbilt tomorrow. See what happens.
That's right. Although, did you see the stat on him? He's 7-1 all time against in games against top 10 teams.
And he hasn't lost at home as Alabama's head coach. I mean, there are reasons to like Alabama big tomorrow.
Yeah.
I
agree with that.
But there have been reasons to like Vanderbilt's opponent big a couple of times these last year and a half.
Vandy's better than they have been, but Alabama looked darn good. And I'm not crazy about that matchup. You know, a game that is not a ranked
matchup.
By the way,
Bama next week in Columbia, Missouri. Missouri's on a bye this week.
That is
so,
right.
So it's, I mean, it's
Missouri's on a bye and about to play their sixth straight home game
before,
next week.
Before they hit the road for
that
Auburn.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, these next two, the Georgia game got a lot of attention, understandably. Tennessee looms. Vanderbilt and Missouri. Dangerous games for Alabama, must wins.
Yeah, I mean, but Alabama's not going to be looking past Vandy. This is where you would think, oh yeah, good trap opportunity. Not after last year. I'm a little interested in the matchup in Louisville, Virginia, coming in as the ranked team. Louisville though is unbeaten.
Louisville has been bubbling under the top 25. Uh-huh. The non-conference schedule doesn't really move the needle because they beat like JMU and two other mid-majors.
Right.
Beat Pitt on the road last week. But it's Louisville is a team where the secret will be out if they get a couple of wins because they've got Virginia. They go to Miami after they have the Virginia bye week Friday night game at Miami are Louisville's next two.
That's big.
Secret will be out on Louisville if they can get some wins. It's probably their last chance to move the needle. I think those are the last two teams in the top 25 they play this year. Are Virginia this week?
Wow.
Missouri in 2 weeks. So
they could almost coast into the end of the playoffs.
They could.
Fun show today. When we come back Monday, it'll be game week for the Georgia Bulldogs, and we will have been over at Hugh Freeze's press conference and see what he has to say about, that matchup and what adjustments have been made. And then, of course, we'll have all week to discuss as to whether they're going to be done or not. But hope everybody has a good weekend. Brian Matthews will be joining us in the studio on Monday. So we'll look back at this weekend and then take a look ahead at Georgia and much more when we talk to you then. But have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.